Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is United States versus...
May it please the court, Judge Caney, Judge Rovner, Judge Wood. My name is Daniel Hessler. I represent Charles Lambert. I'm going to start off by talking about a case called Breguet versus United States. Breguet, as this court knows, concerned the definitions from the Armed Career Criminal Act. And that act defines the term violent felony by means of some specifically listed offenses and an otherwise clause that had a more general definition. And the lower courts in that court case had interpreted the otherwise clause very broadly and included a DUI as a violent felony. And the Supreme Court reversed. And they started out by saying that they accepted that DUI met the definition of the otherwise clause, but they nevertheless concluded that it was too unlike the listed examples for them to believe that Congress had intended the provision to cover it.
I am not certain why you believe that Breguet helps you, because basically what Breguet says is that a statutory list of examples of conduct that violates the statute can be a clue to the statute's intended scope. And do you think that a defendant must use complex forms of deceit in order to qualify for the sophisticated means enhancement, or can a series of simple lies be strung together in a way that the sum of the parts will qualify as sophisticated means?
A series of lies strung together would have to be complex enough to be as sophisticated as the listed examples.
I don't see why that's, in the end, not a question of fact anyway. We don't break it down lie by lie. We step back and look at the process as a whole. The language of 2B1.1B9C talks about intricate offense and the application note conduct pertaining to execution or concealment. So this is an aggregate thing. It's a fact finding. I'm not sure that there's a legal error embedded here.
Well, the question is whether the test that's been being used by this circuit in general and by Judge Dow in particular in this case was the right test. Is it enough for the offense to be more complex? I want to look at this.
Well, I understand, but in this case, as Judge Dow points out, it goes on for years. It covers a wide variety of tactics. I know that you're also making a double counting point about the number of people and the amount of money, but each person gets a tailor-made lie, so he's clearly monitoring very carefully. And it seems to me the very duration of this fraud suggests that that's a fact that the district judge is entitled to weigh.
The judge is entitled to weigh anything he wants to weigh. Everything is relevant.
Would you maintain that he didn't take deliberate steps to make the offense difficult to detect? Would it have been easy for these people hearing all of these lies to detect his scheme?
Every fraud scheme involves lying, and this one did.
I don't know that that's...
There was nothing sophisticated about his lying. His lying said, give me your money, I will invest it, and I'll pay you back with lots of interest.
But he also concocts phony employees to write letters. He sends money, as is typical in a Ponzi scheme, to lull them into thinking that it really is a bona fide investment. He comes up with elaborate statements about what the Internal Revenue Service wants. He's being somewhat creative in his lies, it seems.
He's being persistent, but...
And creative.
But if we compare it...
And long-running.
But...
And
part of the reason that it was long-running is because he only had 17 victims. There are
only? I'm so glad you weren't one of them.
I am too, and I'm glad that all of us were. I am not defending the conduct here, but if we compare it to other Ponzi schemes, we look at cases where there's thousands of victims.
Right, and those people are in jail for thousands of months.
And in this case, you talked about the fact that it was customized for every victim. The devastating schemes are the ones where somebody sets up the program from Estonia and it runs on a computer and it just victimizes. Let's take Madoff for an example.
That's an example.
That's an example.
The worst human being other than Hitler that has ever lived in the history of the world, and we're going to use him to compare.
But it's one that we have common knowledge of. He set up a system and it worked. Mr. Landwehr did not do that. He talked to people individually. This was a very old-fashioned scheme. He talked to people. He shook their hands. He looked them in the eye. He told them whatever it was that he thought.
You're not making him sound attractive.
I don't mean to make him sound attractive. It's an ugly case. The question is whether the court was applying the sophisticated means enhancement correctly. And Begay told us that when legislative text has examples in it, that we need to give meaning to those. And in our situation, the especially complex or especially intricate offense conduct clause of this has taken over, and almost anything is sophisticated. The three key words, complex, intricate, and especially, all signify matters of degree. By themselves, they don't say how complex or how intricate an offense has to be, other than especially. And this is the part of the sophisticated means that has been expanding over the year. And as in Begay, the examples given by the guideline have become irrelevant. What I'm saying is that to read the guideline in a way that gives meaning to every word, the examples should function as a benchmark for what level of complexity or intricacy is especially complex or intricate enough to qualify as sophisticated means. And if the court applies this reading of the guideline, two things are going to happen. First, the existing test, whether a fraud involves greater planning, a level of planning or concealment than a typical fraud of its kind, is no longer going to be valid, because that test does not really come from the guidelines. And the test should be whether the fraud displays the level of sophistication similar to those listed in the examples. And the other effect is that Charles Landwehr's offense will not qualify. And I see my light is on. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Ethel. Mr. Haxel.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Bowling Haxel on behalf of the United States. The defendant's offense conduct was both especially complex and especially intricate.
Listen, you know, would it be possible to conduct a Ponzi scheme that was not considered sophisticated, do you think?
Certainly. If a mass mailing is sent out saying, send the defendant your money and you will receive a 20% return on it, and he puts it into an account and periodically issues some checks, but that is all. There's a classic Ponzi scheme. And it's not complex. But that's not what happened in this case. In this case, not only was it a Ponzi scheme, although that was a part of his conduct, but it also included land trusts, forged documents, fake receipts, fabricated employees, far beyond a typical Ponzi scheme. And that's what makes the defendant's conduct in this case sophisticated and shows that the district court did not commit any error, let alone clear error, in determining that the enhancement applied.
But, you know, the interesting thing, which is actually something Mr. Hessler was alluding to at the end, is in what percentage of the cases dealing with these kinds of frauds is the government seeking this sophisticated means enhancement? And then I suppose the second question is why? You know, is it that out of your prosecutorial discretion you're only bringing cases against the people who go to elaborate lengths to conceal, or is it because the guideline has been drained of any meaning and it's now just kind of automatic? I mean, I can't think of too many of these cases where this enhancement hasn't been sought.
Judge, I believe you're correct. First of all, I apologize. I don't have a statistic on how often the government does seek the enhancement. But you're correct in that essentially our office operates as a gatekeeper. Generally speaking, the office brings cases against the most sophisticated defendants with the biggest schemes, with the most harm inflicted upon its victims. So to that degree, the district courts don't generally see simple schemes. And certainly this court, there's an additional layer of review because the schemes that are simple and the courts find we won't appeal, and the ones that are extremely complex tend to not be appealed by the defendants. So I think that's why the court doesn't see a dramatic number of these cases. Mm-hmm. But certainly I do not believe that all meaning has been drained from the enhancement's definition. And particularly in this case, the meaning was debated. Both Mr. Hessler and the assistant U.S. attorney handling the case provided all of the cases to the court to evaluate whether or not the enhancement applied.
But this is not, I mean, I guess taking a general page, not a specific page from Begay, one can say when application note 8B is talking about something like locating things in a foreign country, I mean, that does make a scheme very difficult to detect, very difficult to run down. Whereas, you know, walking across the street and sweet-talking people isn't the same sort of thing.
Certainly. But again, I think the examples are not themselves prohibitively complex. I cited in our brief the Second Circuit's decision in Jackson, which notes that the very first example is a telemarketing scheme that operates in two different jurisdictions. And the Jackson court noted that's not especially elaborate. And certainly a telemarketing scheme with an office in Kenosha that solicits in Waukegan, you know, a matter of 10 miles, that's not particularly complex. And certainly the defendant's conduct, even when viewing it versus those specific examples, meets that criteria.
So you're prepared to argue that even if we were to take some guidance from Begay, that this conduct would satisfy the sophisticated means?
Absolutely. The defendant's conduct in this case in scope conforms with those examples. And in particular, and I know Your Honor asked Mr. Hessler about the fabricated employee. Fabricated entities are one of these specific note examples. So certainly the defendant's behavior in this case meets exact portions of the enhancement, and certainly in scope meets that enhancement. In sum, the defendant's conduct was complex. It was sophisticated. The district court did not commit any error, let alone clear error, in applying the sophisticated means enhancement. We would ask this court to affirm the defendant's sentence.
Was dating the appellate
the judge?
does the government view that as part of the sophisticated means?
I'm sorry?
Dating the appellate judge. Was that part of the sophisticated means?
We did not present it as such. Certainly a bigger factor was portraying himself as a CPA, an attorney. But I think that is a much bigger component of the sophisticated means.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hexel. How much time?
Two points. First, the court talked about whether the Mr. Landwehr's conduct would meet the test if the test that I'm proposing, if it was simply compared to the examples. The examples say conduct such as hiding assets or transactions are both through the use of fictitious entities, corporate shells, or offshore financial accounts also ordinarily indicates sophisticated means. So it says ordinarily. Just simply locating an office in Kenosha would not be enough. I'm suggesting that's what that ordinarily means. It has to be our normal understanding of offshore multi-jurisdictional events. And the government talked about comparing this to the typical case, and it's our position that the comparison to the typical case, that standard is a standard that just simply invites inequity. One, it's not from the guidelines. Two, the typical case may vary from one area of the country to another. What a particular judge sees in a given period of time may affect his judgment about what is typical. What the U.S. attorneys choose to charge as opposed to what they leave for the states may affect what is typical. It's unreviewable on appeal since the typical case doesn't get appealed at all. And if the courts attempt to construct a norm, essentially we're constructing law from out of thin air.
Do you have statistics on your statement that the typical case doesn't get appealed at all? Because when you sit where we do, we think every single case gets appealed.
I don't have statistics. I have my own experience, and most cases don't get appealed, but that's not a statistic. I seem I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.